All right, folks, welcome back to the latest Mountain West Wire football podcast. We are in our third show, I guess, of the 2019 preview. MWWire.com is our website. You know who it is, Jeremy Moss, hanging out with Matt Kennerly. We're talking Let's Fly, Air Force Falcons. You ready?
Powering right through. Let's do it.
Powering right through. They have the – is it too early to say or not? It's correct to say they have the best helmet design typically in the Mountain West week in, year out.
I think it would be fair to say that they have one of the best helmet designs in college football, period.
Boom. Suck it, Navy. Suck it, Army.
Exactly, right?
They make some good ones, too, so we can't talk too much trash. But that, we're talking Air Force Falcons. If you are new to the show, thank you for listening. Finding us on, where you go to, iTunes. It's not iTunes now. Is it officially Apple Podcast now, Matt? Is that what we're doing?
I don't know. I use Android.
Yeah, me too. I use a MacBook, but I still have the iTunes icon at the bottom. So wherever you get your your podcast from, I guess an Apple device, find us there. I guess it's Apple Podcast, but we're on Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker. I mentioned a PodCoin thing. Check us out there if you want to earn just a listen, and you can maybe get a couple bucks from gift card stuff. Check us there. Basically, search Mountain West Wire Podcast, and you'll find us, right, Matt?
Pretty much.
And so that's our podcast, MW Wire, Facebook, Twitter, all the same stuff, MWC Wire. We have done Utah State. Oh, shoot. Who's the other one? San Jose State. Are those the two we've done so far?
Yes, it is.
And typically, if you're hearing these, they're once a week, every probably Sunday night. But, hey, if you're a Falcon fan to find this, and it's already August 12th, thank you very much from the future. Hopefully, that's the case. And let's just do it. We're talking Air Force Falcons. So what do we know about the Falcons typically, Matt? You give everybody a brief intro of what we should expect this year, or just expect from them in general, typically.
I mean, Air Force is kind of an interesting situation coming into this fall because I don't think anybody would make the argument that Troy Calhoun's on the hot seat or anything like that. But it is a pretty important year for the Falcons this year because they have a lot of guys coming back on both sides of the ball. And you could make the argument that despite their obvious strengths and weaknesses last fall, most of which are intact for better or for worse coming into 2019, that maybe they got a little bit unlucky last year going 5-7. And the biggest reason why is that they were 2-5 decided in games decided by 8 points or fewer. So, you know, right off the bat, this is something we've been talking about off and on pretty much all offseason of like, you know, we think Air Force is going to rebound. And the biggest question is, what is the rebound going to look like? Because the ceiling could be very high.
That's me. That's where I come into play here.
but I think there are still questions about whether they're going to be able to overcome or at least to address their weaknesses from not only the last year, but from the last several years and get back to that, you know, if not necessarily winning 10 games, being a major factor in the Mountain Division.
You're correct. They've had, back-to-back 5-win seasons. It's the only time in Troy Calhoun's year he hasn't gone to the bowl game in every other year. The only other time was when he had that 2-10 year when he went 0-8 in conference play, which is nutty in 13, turned around to 10-3, which, by the way, was only good enough to be fourth in the Mountain Division.
Yeah.
Going 5-3 in league play. All three came, I believe, in divisional play. But he's been to a conference championship game once. He's finished second once his first year, which is pretty amazing, back in 2007. So these last years, he's not in the hot seat by any means. Like you said, we do have our hot seat ranking out, or will be out depending when you're listening to this. And we did our coach rankings. He's a great coach. There are reasons why it's tougher to win there or not. But for the coaching ranking, real quick, overall from the staff, he was eighth. To me, that seemed way too low.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that's probably a touch too low. Maybe people are sleeping just because they haven't won as many games as we've accustomed to seeing them. You know, even if they aren't like, you know, on a Boise State level year in and year out, I think we expect them to be at least bowl eligible year in and year out. So maybe that this little bit of a downswing has had kind of an effect on how we perceive the program.
It certainly is. And part of it is, like, to be honest, a quarterback play, because ever since – who was the last full, healthy 12-game starter? Was it Tim Jefferson, essentially, a while back, who played every game? They've had injuries the past 3 to 5 years of playing Bo English, Donald Hammond, Arian Worthman. There's probably others I'm missing too, but they haven't had health at quarterback in years.
Yeah, Nate Romine, Carson Roberts, the list goes on.
Yeah,
and on.
A couple. I knew I was missing more guys, but
and I think this is something I mentioned in last year's preview, and I think maybe just bears saying again. You know, Air Force needs that kind of depth because of the system that they run, particularly on offense.
Yeah, they and we'll get. I guess we'll start getting the offense now. But you mentioned I was looking up research. You're doing as well. They're having what currently it's a co-starter situation with my favorite. I think it should be Donald Hammond the third, but he's not listed as the main starter because they had Bo English transfer during the offseason, correct? I think in February or
Yes,
March. And
he's in Richmond, I know.
Richmond, that's right. And who is the other co-starter? I don't have it in front of me.
Isaiah Sanders,
Who played quite.
Worthman graduated.
Yeah. Oh, okay. You never know. There's all these guys hanging around. So I knew it was him. I didn't want to give the wrong name. I'm like, hey, Matt, you told me before. Say it again for the folks out there. So who do you like? Let's start there. Who should start? Who should be the guy? Both have, real quick, both have plenty of starting experience. Both have played well. But just go ahead. Who's your starter? Who should be the guy week one against Colgate?
Oh man, that's a tough question. I mean, I'm—I
What we're here for. Ask the tough questions. Come on.
mean, I don't want to say Sanders just to be contrarian because I do think that Hammond should be the guy, and I think a lot of that has to do with the fact of just it's the little things that don't show up on the stat sheet as well. And this is not to disparage Sanders by any stretch. When you look at what both of those guys were able to do last year, Sanders did have the opportunity to throw the ball more often, and he did more with those opportunities than Hammond did. He was averaging about 17 and a half yards per completion, nearly 10 yards an attempt, four touchdowns to three interceptions, and maybe most surprisingly, a 60% completion rate, which is something you almost never see out of an Air Force quarterback. And on a per play basis, once you adjust for sacks and everything like that, both of these guys were pretty much neck and neck as far as yards per carry was concerned. That's where Hammond really has a slight edge. But for me, the answer really lies in what they were able to do in games that they started. And when you look at what Hammond was able to do last year, all you really have to do is look at yards per play. He started five games last year, and they averaged a shade over 6 yards per play, 6.02. And in the seven games that were started by either Worthman or Sanders, they were at only 5.38, which may not sound like a lot. But when you're talking about an offense that really wants to be efficiency based, they need those kind of long grinding drives because explosiveness, other than maybe one guy out on the outside at receiver, is never going to be their calling card.
Sure.
And if that's the one thing that Hammond brings to the table that's a little bit better than Sanders, that's why I think he should be the starter.
I have a couple reasons Sanders should be the starter. Zero interceptions last year. I mean, excuse me, Hammond. Apologies. What am I doing? Not Sanders. Hammond. He had no sacks, only two picks, more touchdowns in the air. Completion percentage. Here's the thing. You mentioned like he has 60, almost 62% for Sanders. Hammond was 52%. You would think almost a 9% difference would be a big deal. That the only difference was the amount of attempts, really. Hammond 38 to 72, Sanders 48 to 78.
Yeah, I mean, if you're not a follower of a triple option team, a 52% completion rate
It's fine.
probably isn't a big deal.
Yeah.
As long as you're not down in the 40s, that's I think where you run into some trouble.
Yeah. So like that percent, the percentage is bigger, but when you look at actual pure numbers of throwing and completing, it's really a handful of catches. You know what I mean? Like, if he, had he gone 42 or 72, it'd basically be the same number, 60%. But also the five sacks is a big deal for Sanders being sacked that many times. Hammond did not get sacked at all. Sanders ran a touch better than Hammond, but. I think like going back to him and he had more touchdowns. He, it's close, but for me, when you look at certain games, like when Hammond came into play, I still look back 2 years ago at that Utah State game that was wild at the end of the season. Like he came in out of nowhere and look what he did and just tore it up. This is a good problem to have, and with this offense, it is well, it is a timing offense because you're doing option based. You have the fullback dive, which I think will be a big play again this year. Cole Fagan back again. It's not a timing. Say look at when we get to Hawaii. We're going to talk about Cordero or Cole McDonald. That's different in the run and shoot where you want a timing, quick passing game. Yes, there's timing with this option attack because if they switch too much, doing the pitch is different from each quarterback. But it's not as big a deal as like throwing down the field. So whoever plays probably will be because of what he was doing specifically, like not a big deal, right?
Yeah, and kind of going back to our previous point, I think if the inevitable, or what is presumably inevitable, happens and he does miss some time, there's a pretty good chance they're going to be in good hands with Sanders under center.
Yeah.
And so I think that that's more than you could have said maybe a year or two ago.
Yeah. Even all those guys played, and like both guys are upperclassmen. Sanders a senior, Hammond a junior. This is the year where I'm pretty bullish on what they could do. So quarterback play, I would lean Hammond, but there's nothing to go wrong either way, I would say. I just like what Hammond did a bit more than Sanders. Like, yes, you want to throw the ball well enough, but it's his, like, what would you rather have an Air Force quarterback? Like, throw slightly better, where if you think about it, if we break it on like a per game basis just about, and he's 60%, 61% to 52, that's what, two throws a game? Mm-hmm. And so it's not like they're going downfield either, because both of them, they're about a yard difference in the yards per attempt, 9.78 to what, 8.65 for Sanders being ahead. And so it's not like they may have a downfield threat occasionally. They don't have Jalen Robinette back out there to go downfield and chuck it to get those big, have him go 3 for 80 and 2 touchdowns. So how much for you really is this passing game needing to be better for Sanders and Hammond? Does it matter to you?
Well, and to that point, if you go back and look at the rushing yards per play, you know, they struggled early on last year running the football, you know, in non-conference play and in early in conference play against, you know, Utah State and Nevada. But when Hammond came in, then they, you know, it wasn't, you know, 4.6 and 4.2 don't sound like a lot, but it's what better than what they were doing in September. And they actually finished the year on a high note by averaging at least 5.5 yards per carry in the three games they played down the stretch. And maybe you can take that with a grain of salt because it was New Mexico, Wyoming, and Colorado State.
Wyoming, come on. Wyoming.
At least two of those opponents maybe have dicey defenses.
In November, they're 5.8. That's four games. So
yeah. So you can kind of point to that as saying, you know, maybe Hammond is the guy who makes everybody around him a little bit better. And if we're going to use that as a segue toward talking about the running backs, this is a group that all of a sudden is very deep. You know, deeper and with less questions again than they faced in the last couple of years.
Yeah, like getting like the running game, like really quick, go back to what you said, that was a 0.4 difference per yard per attempt. When they run the ball much more than anybody else, that 0.4 adds them quickly. So it's not like they're running 20 times, 10 times. They may run 40 times a game. You know what I mean? The amount of, for a season, the amount of attempts they get, 0.4 is huge compared to a team that may run it 20% less than them.
Yeah, and to that point, when you look at their efficiency numbers, you know, by success rate, which is, I forget the exact definition, y'all can look it up, but they were they were 27th last year by success rate, which may not sound like a big deal, but you know, that's basically their game, especially when you consider that that was just a shade better than, or excuse me, a shade behind what Army was able to do. And Army was dead last in explosiveness and in the top 25 in efficiency. They won 11 games last year. So it's not going to take too much of an adjustment or too much, you know, better good fortune with health to really make this offense click, I don't think.
I think you're right. And then one thing, like I mentioned, they bring back the deep running core, which they haven't had, I guess, not talent, but production, I guess, returning. They always have a guy going. They have their top five rushers back from last year. And it starts with they had a good fullback. And was Jacoby Owens a fullback, or was he technically a running back? Do you recall?
Jacoby Owens, I think he was technically a fullback.
I think so as well. So having Cole Fagan, fullback, had nearly 1,000 yards, 7 TDs, did a pretty good rate there. This brings back a play they don't have too often, like the fullback dive. Mm-hmm. It's not like Army. It's not like Navy. Air Force is a little bit different. They're more – is it safe to say, or accurate to say, more of a – like kind of a, they spread out a little bit when they do the triple option. They'll put two wide receivers sometimes. They don't always have like three backs and the quarterback. Like they're not bunched up. They will spread out a little bit. They'll do jet sweeps. They'll bring the receiver in motion. But with the fullback dive, that brings new elements, which they've always tried to do, but now they actually have a threat to do it with Fagan. And having him back, having, depending on Hammond or Sanders, maybe you take one guy away, so technically their top four rushers back. But then you have like Kaden Remsburg, who only had 3 touchdowns, but he led the team in yards per play coming back, almost 5.85 per game after being hit over 4 yards per carry, after getting hit at the line of scrimmage or behind or wherever it may be. They have enough guys where, like, could they get easily 1,800 yards rushing as a team?
They should be able to.
What do they normally get? Because that's kind of 2,500 last year. They better get more than that. Jeez. Let me up my game there. That number's way too low. I apologize, guys.
They ran for 3,400 yards.
I was looking
last year.
What I was doing was looking at just the guys coming back. I'm like, oh, let me just add those in there. No, but they should have. Not, I apologize. That's me looking at who's back and not other guys coming up, because there'll be some guy we don't know. Like, could it be, let's see, Joshua Stoner, a junior who's never had a carry? maybe
Well,
he'll.
he did show out pretty well in spring ball.
I know, maybe he'll have 300 yards. But my point, sorry, Paul, that was a pretty bonehead thing to say there. But the point is, they have all these guys back. They're gonna. Well, they have the best running game in the Mountain West. I know what they normally do, so it's yeah, they'll always have the most yards. Do you think they'll be the most efficient running game in the conference?
If they play the way that I think that we both think they can, they should be.
Like, who's the only real challenger? Would it really just be San Diego State with Juwan Washington and Chase Jasmine?
As far as efficiency is concerned,
Yeah, maybe Nevada. You got Tua Tua there, but they only got the one guy at the moment that we really are tuned in on.
that's a little tricky to say. I mean, maybe you can make an argument for Fresno State because, but
Okay.
they do something a little bit different. You know, they ask a lot of their running backs out of the backfield, as well as, you know, in the passing game, which isn't something you really see a lot of with the Falcons. Maybe Wyoming if they can find one or two guys and keep them healthy.
Okay, I hear you. Okay, but I think the point we're saying is Air Force running game, good to go. No worries there.
They're stacked.
They're
Yeah.
stacked. They're always good. Now they have guys who. This is the time of the year where I say, as I say it every week, probably on these shows, the experience factor. Just because you're back there doesn't mean you're going to be better. They've had good guys and they're coming back. So I think that's a bit more to say that they'll be fine. They'll just need to find, what, a fourth or fifth guy really to get maybe two to four carries a game after the
Yeah,
QB
just
and
keep
Fagan.
the guys in front of them fresh.
Yeah,
Yeah.
get about 10 carries a game from, like I said, maybe it is Stoner. Maybe Fata gets in there, freshman, gets a couple carries at fullback, who is a pretty good size fullback. 5'11", 225, not bad.
Well, interestingly, they don't have Cole Fagan listed on the two deep right now.
Uh-oh.
I'm not sure why. I was trying to look into it and I couldn't get a clear answer for that. But you know, the starter at fullback, at least for right now, is Christian Mallard. So maybe he's another guy who steps up. He and Berto are listed 1-2 at fullback.
Interesting.
I
Okay,
mean,
that
maybe it just has to do with health or something like that. I'm not sure.
we'll have to figure that out because that's a pretty big deal. I think he should be fine, right? Can we just say that?
Yeah.
Off just
One way
because.
or another, I think this offense is going to be fine.
All right, let's go to receiving group really quick, which we won't spend as much time on just because they don't throw very much. There are some concerns. Marcus Bennett's gone. Ronald Cleveland, who is a who catch and run, is gone as well. Andrew Smith is gone. So three of their top four are gone. Looks like it'll probably be George Sanders be their main guy, but he had no touchdowns. But then again, look at all those double digit yards per catch, Matt. He had nearly 17 yards per catch. So he'll still be that deep threat guy, maybe do what Marcus Bennett did at nearly 20 per game. Like, he had 14 catches. That might be what, go to 22 this next year, 23. They have a lot of decent talent, I think, recruiting wise. They actually have some numbers there, but this is the area where the talent not coming back, it's not a big deal. It's just something like, oh, maybe we don't know who it'll be. But they don't throw it enough to make it really a big concern to either be a great addition or something that kind of hinders them. Maybe Cade Wagisback at tight end will be a guy who does a few extra things, but he had three touchdowns on nine catches. That's pretty efficient there.
One guy I'm really interested to keep an eye on going into fall camp and especially early in the season is Brandon Lewis, who
It's tiny.
he's tiny. He's only a sophomore. He actually played a little bit as a freshman last year. You have five catches, 100 yards, which
There
typical for
you
an Air Force receiver. But one thing that I read recently from Brent Bergman over at the Colorado Springs Gazette is that, you know, during off-season training, he clocked a 40 time of 4.32.
That's pretty fast.
That's pretty fast.
That
You know, that's the kind of weapon that the Falcons can make use of, especially since Ronald Cleveland, who you mentioned a minute ago, he was a guy who ran the ball a little bit too. And if they can use Lewis as an end around guy, maybe as a comparison, I know he's not quite the same physical kind of athlete, but like the same way that Boise State used Khalil Shakir.
Yeah.
You know,
Could see that.
that's something that we see a wrinkle in this offense that we don't really see it at the other service academies. So if he's a guy who steps up, maybe he's there. Ben Peterson's another guy, another small guy. But I think they're expecting a lot from Jerrod Sanders as the one guy who's coming back with a lot of experience under his belt.
Yeah, like if you have your leading receiver or 20 catches, you're fine. Like I said, they're gonna throw what, five completions a game, maybe eight. Like they're not gonna throw a ton,
Yeah.
but it depends on if it's Hammond or Sanders. There might be a slight uptick or downtick, but
If things
just
are going well, they're not going to throw that often.
yeah, it's gonna be two of four with one like 50-yard touchdown pass and like 62 yards total,
Exactly.
something like that. All right, offensive line is what's probably obviously more important for Air Force than running backs, or excuse me, receivers, I should say. The big loss is Griffin Landrum there, our second team All-Mountain West guy. Here's the thing again, it's same thing as receiver, another running back. A lot of guys who had career starts last year, multiple guys with double-digit starts coming back, all upperclassmen. It's going to be fine. I guess all they really need to do, and here's the thing, not to downplay the right guard position, but you can kind of stick whoever right guard to be fine, right? Am I okay saying that? Almost?
Yes, and yeah, I think you could probably say that. I mean, I think it'll help that they have a little more continuity, because even though they do have a lot of guys with starting experience, they did experience a little bit of a shuffle here and there last year. Like, they had one starting lineup for the first couple of games, and then they switched out, Miller for Ferguson.
Yeah.
I should probably get first names. Parker Ferguson.
Parker Ferguson, there you go.
And then he stepped in for the rest of the year. They were fine there. And then at a certain point, they swapped out Colin Marquez for Noah Laufenberg. They were swapping out, Connor Vickputz for Christopher Mitchell, except Vickputz is listed as the starter again. So I think that maybe there are still a couple questions to be answered.
But that's good, though.
But I think the upside is that they have a lot of guys with starting experience.
Yeah, and so, like, you mentioned Mitchell and Vickputz. If I can say it right, Vickputz. Vickups? There you go. Whatever.
Vickputz.
There you go.
I think I may have mispronounced that the first time.
We probably all did. But that's fine. If they're battling for position, the center can move to guard. It's not that big of a difference. One guy I want to see play, maybe. You see what Christopher Campbell brings to the table, Matt?
Mm-hmm.
6'1", 325. He has not played. He's a sophomore. So maybe he's a guy who comes in for something, because they don't have that usually that type of a heft on the front offensive line. So
possibly.
Maybe he – I don't know what – I'm just kind of speculating, because you have a big guy like that. He could be a backup. I don't think he'd start this year, but be a key rotation guy. And having that type of guy in your offense with Cole Fagan running behind him to go for that off-guard play, off-tackle play, that's a pretty good lead guy to have. And so overall, there's nothing too much more to say. They'll be fine. There's still some competition, which is good to be, because that means instead of being five deep, maybe you're seven deep and you have – any. If there is an injury, you're fine shuffling guys around and rotating either for production or injury-wise, and I think they'll be okay. And having,
exactly.
And having the skilled running backs back there, they'll know what to do. So there's my concern level of that is much lower than the wide receiver, even though that's not really much of a concern for me because they don't throw the ball very much.
That's fair.
So we got a defense, which is usually the yikes factor sometimes.
Yes and no.
Hey, man, they got Jordan Jackson. He's pretty good, right?
Jordan Jackson is low-key one of my favorite players in the conference.
Is he legit defensive player of the year material?
The only reason I'm going to say no is because Curtis Weaver exists.
And a few other
And David too. Woodward.
And Tippa.
And Kaiva Tizino.
Yeah, so there's plenty of guys. Let me ask you this, and let's broaden it up. I noticed you have not, neither have I, so I'm not just putting this on you. Our top 50 player list, we're continually working on. Hey, maybe it's out at the moment, but we're going to bring it up now since it's still pre-Father's Day at this moment as we're recording. Where would you put him, like, on your list? Like, would he be a top 15 player in the conference?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Top 10?
I would have to sit down and put the list together before I commit to that.
Because just really quick, the reason why I mentioned it, he had, 27 tackles. Boo-hoo, who cares? 12 and a half TFLs, 4.5
Pretty
sacks.
Good.
That efficiency rate of, 40.5 total tackles. I was looking at assisted. So 40 tackles, 12 and a half for TFLs, which basically means one in every 4.5 plays is a behind the line scrimmage tackle for him.
Well, and it wasn't just him in that front seven either. Like, this was one of the better front sevens that they've had in a few years. And you can look at the fact that they just allowed, 3.46 yards per carry. But, by the more advanced numbers, they were just legit across the board. They were 20th in rushing defense, S&P Plus. They were 35th in stuff rate, which is just the percentage of plays stopped at or behind the line of scrimmage. And they were third in opportunity rate, which means that opponents were very rarely getting to that second level after 5 yards. And so, you throw Jordan Jackson out there as a potential defensive player of the year. At least he should be at least in the conversation. I'll say that much. But by Pro Football Focus, Moisés Fita was the highest rated defensive interior lineman who's coming back to the conference this year. And Kyle Johnson, if he's healthy, is a guy who can do a little bit of everything at linebacker. Him, Lakota Wills, this has the potential to be a very special front seven, I think. And when you consider that there are at least a few teams in the conference who at least for right now, have kind of lingering questions about what they're going to do at running back, that's the kind of strength that could pose a serious problem for a lot of opponents on their schedule.
That's really big to say when they only have two starters back in that defensive line position as well.
And that's what I'm saying. It's not just about the defensive line. It's about that defensive front as a whole. They put in a lot of work last year to make it a legitimate strength. And, you know, even though they are losing guys on both levels, you know, Michael Capper's gone, Cody Gessler's gone, you know, Brody Bagnell, Kyle Floyd are both gone. You know, the guys that they have coming back are a very strong foundation that, you know, at least for me, I have confidence that they can maintain a level that's pretty close to what they had last year.
Like, just really quick, going to linebacker, we'll kind of smush these together. Yeah, two guys are gone, you mentioned Bagnell, Floyd. But, like, Grant Donaldson, he played in 10 games. 15 and a half tackles. He still had a couple of TFLs. He had a pass breakup. These guys who play, they have enough guys who played. Like, they have everybody, like, on that linebacker spot. They have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 guys who played 9 or more games. And then you look at, like, look at what Thaddeus the Black movie, like their highest rated recruit, I think, across the board. It's going to be a sophomore. Maybe he'll step up and play. But I think with the guys who played last year, they mixed in guys like Lakota Wills there, or DeMonte Meeks, who played a little bit. And they've made plays. Like, these guys have a sack or two, a TFL or two, and maybe only 10 total tackles all year. So they're coming in to make plays. You could argue, well, that's because the other guys made room for them, like everybody guarding Jordan Jackson. Maybe, but it doesn't matter. That just means if they're putting more pressure on Jackson, double-teaming him or single coverage and clipping him or running away from him, that takes 1 to 2 guys on him and opens up for somebody else. That means you're playing 11 on 10 and not 11 on 11 if you're doing that. And there's plenty of guys who can step up, and if that's probably going to be the same case this year. There's going to be some unknown guy who may have only 18 tackles but has like 4 sacks and, you know what I mean, on the year, 4 TFLs and a sack and a forced fumble. There's going to be somebody to step up, and I don't know if it'll be as good as last year, but it's still going to be pretty good, I think.
It should be, yeah.
And then I guess the secondary, they bring everybody back, and then James.
But
they bring a lot of guys back. What do you mean?
They bring a lot of guys back, but you know, you mentioned that the defense can be kind of a nightmare.
Yeah, and I know. I was getting there. Go ahead.
This is where the big problems are, or at least where they have been in the last few years.
Here's what I'll say: the nicest thing I'll probably say, they played a lot of games, guys. You got that on-field experience, which can be good or okay.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just going to put this in context for everybody. So if you don't go to Bill Connolly's advanced profiles from both last year and this year as he's rolling out his previews, first of all, you should.
Yes.
But to just kind of echo the point that we've been talking about strength versus weaknesses on this side of the ball, I'm just going to throw a couple numbers out there for you. So third and short success rate, third and medium success rate, which is basically any situation where the defense was third or six and fewer yards. They were actually above average last year. But when it came to third and long, they were 126th nationally.
That's not good. That means throwing a lot.
they were 118th in defensive explosiveness allowed. You know, blitz downs, which are just basically like the most obvious passing situations you can have, they were 129th in big play rate allowed. It was just, you know, yeah, they bring everybody back, but that was their biggest Achilles heel last year, and those guys on the back end have a lot to prove.
They do, and also one thing to note as well, it's not really ideal to have your starting free safety lead your team in tackles by a margin.
Yeah.
Where you had Jeremy Fagetalum, if that's correct, 70-something tackles, 78 tackles. 15% of the team tackles came from one player, and it's a safety.
Not ideal.
No. They did get James Jones back, and when he played 2 years ago, he was doing quite well. He's probably their, number two, number three guy out there. It's a concern. They need – so how could they fix this, Matt? Would it be getting a better pass rush to knock some balls down? Was it that offensive lines are able to hold off them on when it's obvious passing downs? Or is it – could it be – I'm just spitballing a couple of things. I'm trying to remember what the Falcons did. Is it that they didn't rush and gave – you mean like did they rush only 4 guys and say, all right, we'll drop everybody to help out, and they're still getting beat? Like there's a lot of things going on. Like do they want to put pressure or do they want to hang back?
See, I'm not sure what the answer is. I just know that like when you look back at a lot of games last year, there was just a lot of plays where receivers were running open with a lot of space. Think of the end of the Wyoming game in the snow, for instance. Think of the first half of the game against Florida Atlantic, where I think it was Chris Robinson completed 24 of his first 25 passes.
Something like that.
That's not something for as good as his defense was in one way. They were really bad the other way. To the tune of they were I think I want to say they were the like if not the worst opponent's passer rating in the conference, one of the worst. And one of the big overarching things is just making sure that they can make stops sooner. Because one number that really jumped out to me was the fact that they were 119th nationally in the first half of games. And so, like, we could talk all we want about how we think the running game is stacked and we think that the front seven is going to be able to continue to make stops and things like that. But if they can't stop the pass and if they're falling behind continually because of that, Air Force is never going to be able to play its game as consistently as it wants to, which is, working the ground game, chewing clock, forcing opponents to try and do the same thing. That was something that failed them pretty, regularly last year.
Yeah, that is going to be a problem where if they're going to be behind, like even if Sanders, who throws a touch better, is quarterback, they're not. It's the Air Force. They're not built to come back down, even like 14 points all that often, or 17 points less. Something kind of wild happens.
Yeah, so like going back to the fact that they were 2-5 in one score games last year, a lot of that had to do with the fact that they were running up big deficits early. They were down by I think like 21 against Florida Atlantic. They were down early I think against San Diego State. They were I think I'm trying to remember how the Boise State game went, but that might be the best example of the fact that they couldn't stop the pass. Brett Rippon had his best game of the year, I would say, in that game against the Falcons. So, yeah, they have everybody coming back, and this is another area where they have depth. Garrett Coppola is actually listed as the backup at both strong and free safety,
That's
and the
not
guys that
good.
they have at the well, and but the guys that they have at the top of the two deep were guys who were getting more playing time last year. They have Fegelum at free safety. That's one spot locked down. They
For
have
sure.
Zane Lewis at one of the cornerback positions. Whether it's Grant Thiel, Milton Bug, Elisha Palm, I think they just need to find those one or two more guys to make it a more cohesive unit and to make sure that they could just be more consistent. It's not necessarily about having a huge drop off, but just avoiding one or two more big plays per game could be all the difference between going 2-5 in one score games and being 5-2 this year.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, it's like it just needs to be incrementally better.
Yeah.
It's like maybe have two fewer completions against you or something. You know what I mean?
Pretty much.
Just something like that, because the defense isn't, even when how we're kind of being probably more optimistic than normally on these teams, because hey, why be super negative? Yeah, I'll kind of take that really quick to see why that could be the case. If you think about it, defense, even with all the guys back, still probably be just okay. You know what I mean? They're not going to be like a top four defense in the conference, even with all these players back. They'll probably be pretty good, but there's still things that they need to work on just because of its Air Force. They get tired late in the season with the amount of practice hours they're allowed to have, how many games or class schedules and credits they have to do. Their schedule's crazy. End of the year can kind of get to them, even if they are really good. So they
Yeah, I mean,
need
I think,
to improve in some areas that they were not last year. Just get a bit better in a few spots.
if you look at the difference between what they were able to do in rushing S&P versus passing S&P on defense, I mentioned they were 20th against the run and 125th against the pass. I think all it's really going to take for this to be a legitimately dangerous defense is to just escape the triple digits.
You think that's all it takes, really?
I think so.
Interesting. All right, that's fair. So you think that's all it'll be? Just kind of be 90, 90. All right, I hear you. I hear you. Okay, should we go to what do we? Actually, let's take a quick time out real quick. We got to schedule. Oh, no, sorry, I always forget it, Matt. You gonna yell at me for forgetting special teams again?
Never.
Never. Okay, you can scold me if you'd like privately. That's okay.
No, I'll forgive you this time.
special teams. So really quick, we'll blast through these. They bring everybody back. They bring their punters are back. Their kickoff guys are back. Place kickers back. I guess what they do need is kick and punt returner. So even now, I mentioned Ronald Cleveland was the guy. Maybe it'll be his replacement in the receiver portion. Who was that we mentioned again? The small guy is like 165. I'd like to have names. I don't like to say just that dude.
Are you talking about Brandon Lewis?
Yeah, Brandon Lewis. Sorry. Escape me for a moment. He might return kicks if he is that fast, like you mentioned. Hey, 4.3 speed. But I guess a big concern is he's going to return kicks and punts.
Well, what's interesting is that post-spring depth chart doesn't even include a punt returner or a kick returner.
Hey, maybe Coach Calhoun's up something tricky.
They'll cross.
That means their defense is so good they will not need to punt. Or, crap, our defense is terrible to score every time against us. pick which one you want, but they'll be fine. It's like when they had return guys last year, like Joseph Saucier did pretty good, but they didn't have that many like returns. They only had, 10 kick returns? You know what I mean? So yeah. They'll be fine. It's whatever. It's special teams. Here's what the main thing is, Matt. You know what you do you want to do? Not drop the ball. Call a fair
that
catch.
Works.
Call a fair catch when needed. No backwards laterals unless it's necessary, like 5 seconds left or down by four. You know what I mean? You got to score. So just hold the ball and, don't blow it. That's all right.
There you go.
All right, let's take a quick break, and we'll be back to talk, schedules and stuff because that's what we do. All right, folks. Matt, you ready for schedule time?
Let's do it.
During this whole podcast, I have not found my composite schedule so far. I've been looking and typing things in, so hopefully my win-loss against each other is fine. Also, I'd like to take a quick note real quick. So we get some Twitter messages just for the heck of it. Apparently, I don't know how official this partnership is with USA Today and our website and the Facebook page, but let's go with it because they're sharing all of our stuff, so why not be nice? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Did you see those mentions in there, Matt, recently today?
I haven't really looked today now.
No, that's fine. So apparently, if you go to Mountain West Football Alliance, they are, I guess they're part, because we're with USA Today. You should know that. If you don't, we are, so we're kind of. From us, College Football News, and whoever else post stuff on there. So if you want to check that page out, give it a like. We're grateful for traffic that comes that way. So if you want to check out their page, some more people will comment about stuff. Or also, they have a just College Football Alliance, it's called. So go check those out. Why not? You know what I mean?
Very cool.
So if you want any USA Today stuff, they're building the college network larger. And so hopefully they'll put stuff there. So go give them a like. I just did. So schedule time. I am extremely high in Air Force, so don't laugh at people when I say they're going like 13-0. I'm not, but I'm just saying. Don't laugh if that's my case.
Okay, all right.
So me and Matt kind of discussed the plan pre-show. Like, any conference game, we're kind of going to not blast through, but kind of go a little quicker than normal. Because if we're talking Boise, San Jose, Hawaii, New Mexico, you guys already get the whole preview. So we may give a few snippets about the teams, but we're not going to spend exorbitant amount of time on those teams. Non-conference games will because they play Colgate.
That should be a win.
Then they get the off week. They get a week 2 bye and like a whatever November 23rd bye, which is 1 week before the season ends. Couldn't they get like a week 4 and a week 10 bye to help them out?
I'm sure they don't mind. You know, breather's a breather whenever it is.
I hear you. So they beat Colgate. Then they go to Colorado, which is a... You see the Pac-12, the Mercury News recently put out that maybe Pac-12 should do like 9 a.m. local kickoffs.
I'm all for it.
This game at Colorado, it's 11 a.m. or 10 a.m. Pacific.
I already roll out of bed on Saturday mornings just all day.
Why not watch the game if we want to watch earlier than staying up? Which is, so to be honest, when it gets 9, 10, 11 o'clock, you're watching football all day, it can get a bit taxing a little bit, right?
Exactly.
Just saying, if you got stuff to do, so get one game out of the way early on, might as well. So they go to Colorado. Here's the biggest concern I think in this game is Colorado has Steven Montez at quarterback, who's whatever, but you know what they do have, Matt. They have a really, really, really good wide receiver who might be the best in the country.
Are you referring to Laviska Shenault Jr.?
Good job saying that name. I was not going to pronounce it, but thank you for that. If Montez is just okay, and we already mentioned how crucial the Air Force backfield is in the secondary, that's probably the key position to watch, the just matchup.
Keep that offense off the field, right?
Yeah. Just run the ball. Pull the water boy, take a knee if you're up by 14 points. I don't know. No, you don't take it. That's the opposite way. Sorry, apologies. Just keep the ball running. That's what I meant to say. Keep the clock going. Score touchdowns. Cole Fagan, stay in bounds. Maybe make sure those passes are crisp and you don't step out of bounds at all. So, but besides that, it's like this is a game Air Force could win. Like, it's not out of the question they could win this game. But the biggest concern really is if Montez can connect and they have decent day passing the ball. That's the only way I think Colorado is going to be able to be victorious if they get their passing game going, which – to be
yeah,
great.
And I mean, and the Buffaloes had, I guess, what I would consider a good but not great defense last year, but you know they are losing a lot of talent in their own front seven, which I think is what ultimately will make this game very interesting. You know, they do have a couple of playmakers up front, like Mustafa Johnson had 15 and a half tackles for loss and 7.5 sacks last year. He's going to be a factor. You know, Nate Landman at inside linebacker, he had 15 TFLs last year. He's going to be pretty good. And you know, I think it'll be a nice test for the Falcons right out the chute. You know, not only how their strengths are going to line up against a team's weaknesses, but also how their weaknesses are going to be addressed, you know, against one team's very, very obvious strength. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and these teams, like, even though they're in the same state, they don't play all that often.
But... Okay, hold on. That was one of my fun facts for this for this podcast. Did you realize they haven't played since 1974?
What's that, 40 years now coming up? 45 years?
Yeah.
Too long. What's the deal? Come on.
That seems insane.
They play, I think part of the reason, they play Colorado State every year.
No, I mean, I get that. But with the in-state rival, you would think they would throw, you know, one or two matchups once every decade at least.
It's like even though that's like the I believe the longest running college football rivalry almost in the country. Like 100+ times they played.
They're right down the road from one another.
Yeah,
you know, gotta get it together, Boulder.
So that's I thought it was. I was gonna say the '80s, but I didn't realize it was like 74. Have they played in any bowl games at all?
No. Like the last time they played, Colorado was in the Big Eight.
Oh, jeez, pre-SWC days, or not? Well, I guess no, SWC days exactly.
And Air Force was an independent.
Oh, interesting. What year is that, 74?
1974 was their last matchup. And the Falcons haven't beaten the Buffalo since 1968.
When did they join the WAC?
Oh, I don't know that off the top
of my head. Okay, I was just wondering. I was trying to think, like, wait, that's kind of weird. No worries. But so what do you think? Win, loss, what do you got?
I think it should be closer than what S&P Plus suggests, because I think they have them as a 33%? Chance.
I was pulling up Colorado's thing here. I don't have it at the moment, but if it's
33%. I think it'll be a little bit closer than that, because I think the Air Force is built to contend with this Colorado team maybe a little better than a lot of other Power 5 opponents. But ultimately, I have this one as a close loss for the Falcons.
Oh, man, you disrespected Calhoun out of the gate.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, don't tell me sorry. Tell those guys. I'm going victory.
Okay.
Because... if you've heard our stupid early preseason show back in, January, you know where this is going, which I may have given away as well, where it's going.
I admire your conviction.
Hey, am I too far off on that? A good season?
I mean, you're banking really hard on the rebound. That's all I'm going
to
say.
Hey, 2-10 to 10-2 one year, 10-3?
That's true. They have done it before.
Just
saying. And that's something we've talked about in podcast pasts.
And they can do it. So here's – so get the win. Got that. So for me, at least, I should say. Next on the schedule – Saturday at Colorado, Friday at Boise State. This is early. We'll go quickly through these, but this is early enough in the year because Boise State will have played by this point Florida State and Marshall and somebody else I can't think of at the moment because we haven't talked about Boise State yet. But will their quarterback situation be settled by then? Maybe. Maybe not. Will they go to Hank or they keep with Chase Cord there at quarterback or vice versa? They've also played Portland State, so that doesn't matter for Boise State. This could be, and we know it. Like, Boise fans will be mad at us, but Air Force plays very well against the Broncos.
No, I mean, you're not wrong. One of the things that we'll probably bring up again and again throughout these team previews is Boise State's going to have a sensational defense. Mm-hmm. But you could have said the same thing last year, and Air Force dropped 38 on them basically took them to the wire, and it took a really superhuman effort from Brett Rippon to hold them off.
That's right. It's a road game, though, this year, too.
That's true.
It's, like I said, a short week. Boise's playing a FCS team week before. Air Force is playing a Colorado team that may make a bowl game or not. What do you think? I'm torn on this. I've not entered in my win-loss for this one yet. I need to hear your side of the story for a half second.
You know what? I have this one as an Air Force loss, but that's not for lack of effort. You know, if you look at the recent history between these two rivals since Boise State came, There really has only been maybe one or two blowouts the entire time. Of course, everybody remembers the 3-game win streak that the Falcons had.
Weston Stillhammer, 7-turnover game.
But they play Boise tougher, just more consistently than just about anybody else in the conference. And so I'm kind of expecting something similar. But ultimately, I feel like the Broncos are going to have too much of a talent advantage for Air Force to really come out on top.
I agree too. I'm going a close loss for Air Force for Boise State to get the win. That sounded weird. Air Force to lose, I should say.
I mean, they have it as a 14% chance for Air Force. I'm going to say it's maybe closer to 1-3.
Yeah, I'd say that 1-3, 1-4, somewhere in that
Yeah.
range. So I get a close loss there. Then they play San Jose State the next week at home. That'll be that should be a win. I don't think there's too much of San Jose State pulling off that upset.
Exactly. Yeah, I have that as a win as well.
And then we go to Navy. This isn't your same old Navy from a couple years ago. This Navy team's not that good. They were not very good last year. They didn't go to a bowl game, but it's a rivalry, which is a huge deal. Commander in chief on the line again. I think Air Force can do the win because. Get the win because they've been bad too the past 2 years. So you could say, hey, dude, Air Force hasn't been good either. But I think I'm more confident Air Force rebounded than Navy just because they had like a once in a great quarterback a couple years ago. Not Keenan Reynolds, but even beyond that, they haven't. After him, they've kind of struggled a bit to find a guy to run the ball and move on offense.
No, I mean, I definitely think you're right. They do have Malcolm Perry coming back, which I think is something, but they're losing a lot of production elsewhere on offense. They're losing their number one receiver, too. They're losing, let's see, five of their top seven rushers from last year.
They'll replace them, but it's still concerning to not know who those guys are at this moment.
Oh, and also they're losing four guys who had at least 13 career starts on the offensive line.
Air Force by 10.
So they're kind of starting over on offense. And oh, by the way, they're losing a lot from last year's defense too, which wasn't very good. They were in the triple digits by defensive S&P plus. But so maybe you can say, well, they might be better off for all the guys that they're losing.
But maybe so.
But this was not a particularly close game last year, and I'm not going to be surprised if this is Air Force's biggest win of the year. So I have this one as a big
Ooh.
Air Force win.
Biggest win of the year?
I think it could be.
More than beating San Jose State or New Mexico?
It could be.
Okay, all right. Then next week is a big game. Fresno State at home. How nervous are you for this game, Matt?
I remember the last time they played the Falcons.
Refresh us. What happened a couple years ago?
That was the Arian Worthman game when I think he replaced Nate Romine sometime in the third quarter, and then they reeled off three straight touchdowns to come back and win the game.
This is also pre-Tedford, by the way, so
Yeah, that's true.
there's that to consider.
That's true. The defense wasn't quite up to snuff at that point. And I think this is going to be one of the low-key, more fascinating games of the year.
Oh, yeah.
Just because, we'll talk more about this when we get to the Bulldogs, but the Bulldogs seem likely to take a step back. It's just a matter of how much. While we've been talking about Air Force being able to take a step forward with these kind of strengths and weaknesses that we've been talking on and on about. So I think, man. I'm not sure where you go to start talking about this.
Here's what I say. Like, first off, let's do this. I'm leaning Fresno because they play at New Mexico State, then have a bye week, then go to Air Force. So they get the off week to help. Even here's the thing too, even though they're in the same conference, they don't face his offense all the time, so that extra week to study is helpful. Fresno State is gonna be fine on offense with Ronnie Rivers and whoever else. Defense, yeah, lost a couple guys. They'll be fine though. I do think this will be a close game. It's on the road, which does counter a little bit for what Air Force and Fresno. I think overall, like these teams are probably pretty evenly matched, I think, for what they'll end up finishing the year with. I for some reason I want to lean toward Fresno State, but I'm not sure why. Maybe because they get the off week and they play a New Mexico State team who's just okay. They're not going to be what they thought they were last year, or let alone the year before. So I'm sl it is also to be noted, Air Force is only given a 35% chance.
See, I think this is exactly the kind of game where if you don't follow Bill Connolly on Twitter, he always says that the S&P Plus tends to underrate the service academies a little bit.
Fact, because recruiting is hard to get through for a freshman, true freshman.
And one of the other things that really jumped out to me in researching the Falcons is they're always pretty tough at home.
Oh yeah.
Especially under Troy Calhoun, they've had exactly one season where they were worse than 500 at Falcon Stadium,
Is that 2-1
and
year?
that was in 2007. Yeah. So I think this is the kind of game where it might seem like Fresno State has an edge going on the road, but I actually have this one as an Air Force win.
What? Air Force victory?
I think so. I think this
I'm
is one of
torn.
those.
I'm torn on this one. I don't know.
I'm going to preface it by saying I think it's a lot closer to 50-50 than Boise
Oh,
State is.
I agree.
And because I would say that Boise State and Colorado are maybe more like somewhere between 30 and 40%. I think this is a true 50-50 game that doesn't quite show up when you look at the numbers here in early June.
So do you think with, like you mentioned, S&P Plus down rate, let me guess, not downgrades, sir, but rates not as favorably academies, what would you say that percentage could be, 5 to 10% in win probability?
That's what I'm saying. I think it's probably a lot closer to 50 than 35%, which is where it's at right now.
I'm going Air Force loss. I don't like it though, because that bye week's a big deal for me, and I think that's what could be the difference.
I mean, flip a coin, nothing's going to surprise me.
Yeah, and with what Fresno does, like Tefford's a great coach. This will also be the first time. Could this be like possibly his first time ever facing a triple option team, Tedford?
Ooh, I'd have to dig back into what he did at Cal.
I don't. I'm gonna say yes. Screw it. I like the Falcons. Go, let's fly. Go Air Force. Victory. I'm doing it.
Okay, all right.
Boom. I'm already extremely high in the Falcons. So I'll go with it. Next week at Hawaii. Oh boy. You think Fresno Air Force is low key fun? This one at Hawaii late at night. Run and shoot versus run option. Gets me all
This and
excited.
this is and this is actually a 50-50 game per S&P Plus.
Which means Falcons should win, right? I don't know. This is a game, like we said, Colorado's a game where the secondary is going to be tested. This game is really going to test the secondary.
Definitely.
And
You know,
oh, this will be a good one.
and it's interesting too because, you know, on the one hand, we saw Hawaii struggle. They struggled a little bit against Army last year, but did they play Navy last year? Or is that my imagination?
Hawaii?
Yeah.
They played Army. I think
Oh yeah,
they.
they opened the year against Hawaii. Duh.
They played both. That's right. They could have won the Commander Chief. We made that joke last
Yeah,
year.
they okay, so they lit up Navy, who, as we just talked about, not a very good defense, and they struggled against Army, which had a pretty good defense. And so, man, contrast the styles really makes this one really hard to figure one way or the other.
I think, well, we've also seen what Hawaii's defense has done or not done, really, running wise. I think it's on the road. I think here's how I think it'll play out. We said we're not going to talk too much conference games, but here we are. I would say, like you mentioned before, if Hawaii's offense gets going, they're going to win. Because if they get up 14-0, they go for it on 4th and 2 at their own 40, convert multiple times. They go 3-4 on 4th down to keep the ball moving, go for touchdowns, not field goals. They find Cedric Bird or whoever out there catching the ball from Cole McDonald or Cordero out there. Probably McDonald, I'm leaning that way. But if it's like that, where it's out 17-3, 24-10, Air Force is not going to win. So Air Force needs two things: their secondary to make, or just their defense in general, slow down the passing attack. It's kind of generic, really, what I'm saying, but just get to the quarterback, do what you can, get knock the ball down, get them uncomfortable, and hold the ball. Do have one of those classic 45-minute time possessions in your favor.
Yeah.
Even, but here's the, even that 15 minutes Hawaii has, they could still score 35 points because how quickly they could strike. So I think that's the main thing: kind of hold the ball, slow play the game. But this is gonna be one that people really should stay up late to watch.
I know I am.
Because it's a, it also good note on this one. It is a, well, it's in Hawaii. It's actually a CBS Sports Network Hawaii game at home.
Oh, very nice.
So it's a 11 Eastern. So what's that? 5 Hawaii, 7 Pacific, right?
I think
Eight,
so,
no,
yeah.
eight, yes, 8 Pacific. Sorry, there we go. So no, it's a little late, but that's a game we'll be pretty excited. But I'm going Victory Air Force.
Yeah, I have that as a win too.
Utah State at home. I'll just say loss right now. That'll be very difficult to do.
Yeah,
Playing
same.
Fresno, who will be contend for the West at Hawaii, which they still make contend for the West, but travel and a tough opponent. And then playing host, even though it's hosting Utah State, which will have the best quarterback and top two offense, I think top three offense at worst, one of the best offenses, pretty good defense, like Woodward, Tippa back there, whoever's going to be in secondary will be fine with Gary Anderson's defense. I would say it is a winnable game by any stretch, but I just don't think the way their games have been before, no bye week, I think they're, because look at their schedule, they go to Navy, across the country, come all the way back home, so obviously back and forth flight, all the way to Hawaii, and you're playing probably at least three bowl teams in that stretch as well.
Yeah.
Including Utah State. Then next week, geez, they stay home finally, no, every other week, but they get Army, who might be the best team, not in the, you know what I mean, from the group of five, I guess, who's really good with Jeff Monkey there doing his thing.
I mean, are we sure about that?
Maybe. Why not? I said maybe.
I feel like everybody's inflating Army just a little bit.
Okay, be the naysayer for the Golden Knights or whatever they are. Not Golden Knights, the Black Knights, sorry. That's Vegas hockey. I don't think you're wrong by any stretch, but I think they're going to be still really good.
I mean, what was their best win last year? Hawaii?
Ooh,
beating Buffalo was all right.
Did Buffalo go to the MAC title game?
They did.
But they lost, I believe, right?
Yes.
Let me pull up the schedule. Who are their wins? What was last
okay, year? So I'm just going to run through the list of everybody that Army beat last year. Liberty, Hawaii, yeah. Buffalo, San Jose State, Miami of Ohio, Eastern Michigan, Air Force, Lafayette, Colgate.
One bowl team in there? Two bowl teams?
Hawaii
and Buffalo?
Yeah, I believe so.
Interesting.
They had a pillow soft schedule last year.
Key point number two on Bill Connolly's preview. QB Kelvin Hopkins Jr. returns. Combined with the softest schedule you ever see. Gives him great odds at a third straight double to do it.
Have you seen their schedule for this year? I mean, other than Rice, or excuse me, Michigan.
Dude, if you said Rice is a good team, I'm like, what are you doing?
No, here's the thing. Rice, UTSA, Morgan State.
Morgan Stanley? Wait, is that Morgan Stanley?
No, Morgan State.
Okay.
And then Tulane, Western Kentucky, Georgia State, San Jose State, Air Force in November. And then UMass, VMI, Hawaii, end the year against Navy.
We discussed this before.
That is not a particularly impressive schedule.
I think we mentioned probably maybe offline or Twitter at some point. Air Force is probably their second toughest game on the schedule.
It might be, yeah.
And maybe Air Force is really good like I think they are, but maybe you're right. Okay, well, maybe that is the point. Maybe we should start this trend here, say overrated Army?
Yeah, why not?
Army's gonna be overrated.
It's the Mountain West versus everyone.
Hey, at least we had a rational UCF fan today on Twitter talking back and forth. Probably didn't see that. Because there was the talk, because yeah, San Diego State's doing a pretty good job of their schedule. And you put out the playing Tijuana or something. Was that you who did that on our Twitter account?
Yeah.
Go play in Mexico, which why not? Because there's that stadium there right on the border for the Liga MX team, I believe, don't they?
I think so. Yeah, so,
they got soccer teams somewhere. Mexico's like it's great, but there is just talk about bringing. I don't know where it's coming from, but good schedules and whatnot. But this is the opposite of that. Although I don't remember I brought it up. Whatever, that's here or there. Go check our Twitter for our conversation. It was weird, but maybe you are right. Maybe Army is they're going to get the wins, but should they be ranked? Could this be a point, Matt, where they go? Also beating at Michigan. I wouldn't be really surprised either if that happens just because it's Michigan and they always fold somewhere, right? Probably not.
Not only that, but they lost their defensive coordinator to North Carolina. Mm-hmm. You know, they lost two key contributors along their defensive line. They lost three of their four top tacklers at linebacker. They lost at least two guys in their secondary. So, and this was a team that just barely survived Air Force last year. You know, let's not forget it was a 3-point game, and I don't think that the defense they're bringing back is going to be able to hold the Falcons to, 3.5 yards per carry again? I just don't see that happening. I'm not expecting the Falcons to run away with it, but I do expect them to win by a fairly comfortable margin.
Like, here's the thing, real quick. They're projected to win probably 9 to 10 wins.
Mm-hmm.
They're projected. I know S&P Plus devalues a little bit because it's hard to get that incoming recruiting class. They're projected at 80th, but to be a 10-win team. That kind of tells me it's like, well, maybe the schedule is that bad.
Well, yeah, I mean, just look at the S&P ranks of all their opponents. They got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7,
triple digits?
It's seven in the triple digits.
Then Morgan State and Tulane's at 98, and Air Force is 90, and Hawaii's 94.
And VMI. So
Oh.
they get to beat up on two FCS teams again.
Did they play 13 games, I'm guessing? That why? Three, four.
Yeah.
Okay, they go to Hawaii. Yeah, I'm saying Army's overrated. I'll say it.
No, everybody who's putting Army in their top 25 is going to get a rude awakening by, like, I don't know, early October.
Oh, wait. No. They could lose to Rice week one. Why not?
No, they're not. But they're going to lose to Michigan. They could probably lose to Tulane.
Let me ask you this. Okay, real quick. I know it's not an Army podcast, but I know some people will not be too happy if they listen later on. But people want us to. Hey, this is an Air Force show, man. We got to downgrade the academies when we can, the rivals, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So, okay, say they're ranked. They beat Rice. They lose to Michigan. So they're 1-1, not ranked. What would it take for them to be ranked again?
They'd probably have to rip off like 6 or 7 wins in a row.
Be like 9-1 to maybe get ranked?
And then have to be convincing wins too. I mean, look at what happened to Utah State last year.
Exactly. You're right. Yeah, that's tough, right?
It is.
You convinced me. They're gonna beat Army.
They're going to beat Army.
They're going to go to New Mexico, beat New Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to go to Colorado State, probably beat Colorado State.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
They should. How much of a threat is Wyoming, do you think? The final game of the year, which is goes after a bye week, so they get off week after CSU, then they stay home and host Wyoming.
I've been thinking a lot about Wyoming this offseason. Just because they're one of the more, I feel like they're one of the more interesting teams. You know, because it's not like they're at a crossroads, but they're reloading in a way that I think is unique across the Mountain West.
Do you think I've seen a lot of people out there saying Wyoming's gonna take this huge jump? I'm not one of those people. Are you in that camp, or do you think they're just gonna be maybe struggle to get to a bowl game or be right around a 6-win Cowboy team?
I think that Wyoming is definitely good enough to be a bowl eligible. And
But
when you look at the recent history of this particular matchup, there's really no doubt that the Cowboys have had the upper hand. You know, they've won what, one, two, three, four, five, six, they've won 6 of the last 8 against Air Force. And while a lot of them have been fairly close games, you know, maybe this is the opposite of, you know, what we might talk about with like the Rams not being able to get over the hump against the Falcons, or Boise State struggling year in and year out. You know, Wyoming seems to have, at least in recent history, have, I don't know, want to say solved the Falcons, but they've definitely had a lot more success than a lot of other teams in the conference have.
But are you do you think they'll be like an above average team? Because I see people say, oh, they're gonna make this big jump, they're gonna compete for the Mountain Division. I am nowhere near that happening.
I think it all depends on how their defense comes together.
It will, but their offense is just garbage. Come
I
on.
think their offense knows exactly what it wants to be. It's just a matter of finding the personnel to fit that, which we'll talk more about when we get to the Cowboys preview. I think a lot of it just depends on, you know, finding one or two healthy running backs, you know, ensuring that they stay healthy and making sure the passing game does just enough, which when you look back to last year's game, that's pretty much how things unfolded. You know, they didn't really do that much with Tyler VandeWall under center, but they did just enough and got just enough plays on defense to hold the Falcons off.
It's going to take.
So,
It's going to take that
yeah.
defense doing something.
But again, you know, going back to, you know, last year it was in the snow at Wyoming. This year it's going to be at home, where Air Force has generally been pretty tough.
TBA, TBD for TV time. So it could be a snow game again, possibly.
So I don't know. I mean, I could see the argument for Air Force taking a jump. I could also see it for Wyoming too. And while this isn't quite a true 50-50 game, they actually give the Falcons a 58% chance to win this one. I do see it as being closer to 50-50.
I think it'd be fairly close. My thing is Wyoming's offense. I know the Nico Evans last year is great, who helped them a ton with that, along with that defense, who had guys like Logan Wilson back, who's going to be first team all conference. Maybe there's another defender we didn't even mention for a defensive player of the year potential. He could be in the
Oh
mix
yeah,
too.
that's true, yeah.
Sorry, Cowboys fans. But I want to see it with Shawn Chambers and whoever's running the ball. It's like, I know it can't be as bad as last year passing the ball. But I want to see some form of life before I'm going to be confident in anything they do besides maybe running the ball. So I'm going to victory, which means my record, oh boy, 10-2, 10-2 Air Force. losing to Boise State and Utah State.
I mean, I think I have this as a win too, but honestly, this is the kind of matchup where nothing would surprise me.
Agreed.
Just because they've tended to play each other very close over the years.
So what's your record? 9-3?
Let's see. 1-2. Yeah, 9-3.
Is there something wrong with us picking Air Force to be this good this year?
I don't think so, no.
I'm saying I don't think we're out of our mind thinking they'll be this good.
No. Would they?
I'm just wondering.
Maybe it's the trendy pick.
But wait, trendy pick. I'm the one who said this in January. They'd win 10 games.
That's what I'm saying. You started the trend.
Thank you. I want to stop the credit because I want that. I think this will be good. I also mentioned a couple years ago, not to say I'm great on all these picks, but when people are poo hooing or saying Josh Allen's the best quarterback, I'm like, hey, Nick Stevens, look for him. He's pretty good. And what did he do? Really good year.
That's true.
I'm just saying. Out of all the games, like, yes, 10-2, will it happen? Who knows? Like, if I'm looking at their schedule, like, other games they could lose. Like they could lose at Colorado. I'm going to be realistic. They could lose at Colorado. They could lose to Fresno State. They probably could lose to Hawaii. Even Army was close last year. They could be, like, 7-5. But I think from what they did last year and who's coming back, the amount of years they've had of kind of being not great, they're going to rebound. I think they'll be fine. With my 10-2 record, they're not going to win the division because they lost two conference games, two division games. They'll finish third and probably go to the Bowl. Was the Armed Forces Bowl in Texas and play, or Lockheed Martin Bowl, I think it is, and play some Big Ten team, whatever it may be.
Mm-hmm.
Which should be fine. So I'm good with that. I'm good with 10-2. I think I started the trend. I think they're going to be a great team. And even being 10-2, with the losses coupled where they're at, they may not be ranked till unless they win a bowl game, unfortunately.
They're going to be a nightmare for pretty much everybody on their schedule.
They always are, but it's going to be exceptionally a nightmare because they have a running back who's been there for a couple of years and not replacing half the running tack. I guess keep a quarterback. I prefer Hammond, as do you. Sanders is fine, but find a good QB, stick with it, and hopefully health stays their way. But they're going to be really good this year. They're going to rebound and have one of Calhoun's better years as a head coach, I think.
Yeah, I think so too.
I'm asking this. Would it be shock you if they were to – this is wild – we kind of mentioned Boise State could being early. That could be a winnable game. Utah State would be really tough. Like, could they go 11-1 maybe? 12-0?
If things break,
exactly right.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of it is going to come down to the defense and just figuring out how to stop the pass.
Yeah.
Because that's one thing that, you know, Colorado has their one weapon. And even though Boise State has their big question at quarterback and – you know, we know that they've got a ton of receiving talent. You know, we know that Utah State has a ton of talent on offense. And even some of these other teams you mentioned, you know, Colorado State may not have Preston Williams anymore, but they still got guys like Warren Jackson. You know, Fresno State may not have Keyshawn Johnson anymore, but they've got a lot of young talent coming up. And of course, we talked about Hawaii having the run and shoot. You know, they've got Cedric Bird, JoJo Ward, and like a handful of other guys. So how well they answer that question, I think, is going to be it could be the difference between something like going 6-6 again or 5-7 again and being a 9 or 10 win team.
All right, so we think they're going to be pretty good. So you heard it here first. Actually, back in January, you heard it here first.
Are you talking about Air Force? You mean?
Oh, jeez. I liked an Air Force, a Utah State Twitter account who followed us. I'm like, oh, they're pretty cool. Sorry. Yeah, Air Force. Oh, jeez. I need to pay attention to them sometimes a bit more. Final word on Air Force. They anything you got, or you're good with your 9-3 record and mark it in pen on your spreadsheet?
I think I'm all set.
10-2 for me. All right. So next week's show, I think we should do this, Matt. Bounce back and forth between Mountain and West Division.
All right.
This is number 4. We are 25% away through our preview. So next week, it'll be either San Diego State, Hawaii, UNLV, or Nevada, right?
Yes.
Okay. Or have we done Fresno already too?
We have not.
Oh, so there's five teams. Oh, we've only. Oh, yes. Well, it's number 3, right? Sorry. Yeah, we've only done one West team, not San Jose State. So, I could have just said anybody but San Jose State next time, but I was trying to outthink myself once again. But
yeah, that's fair.
That's all good. We're doing an hour plus show. Give us a break. It's June. But thank you for listening. Thank you for downloading. MWR.com is our podcast or website. You can find our podcast at Stitcher, iTunes, tune in. We're doing our top 50 countdown. It's going to be going on shortly. We're doing a ton of preseason work, so We already have some Colorado State previews out. We'll have some position previews out. Actually, we have a new Air Force writer, Sean O'Toole. Give him a check out his first article, Air Force QB Situations. Talked about that a bit, so go check out his stuff. He has about four articles in the book, so look for running back, receiver look, and some other stuff as well. So we'll be back next time, and hey, just tell your friends and say hello.
Final words about Utah State?